You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Big show today. Frank Lampard sacked as coach of Chelsea. Julian Laurent, Stevie Nicol and Don Hutchinson here to discuss that decision. Stevie, let's start simply, shall we? Was it fair?
I don't think it's fair, no. The problem is that we're talking about a club that's not normal. We're talking about a club that, regardless of the name of the manager, regardless of the CV or experience or whatever it may be, when you lose so many games, you don't get a chance to get back to where you may have been before. You know, you lose games, you lose your job. That's kind of their motto. And so Frank just falls into the spot where others before him have. You lose, goodbye.
Don, they cited in the statement that they weren't seeing any particular progress under Lampard. Fair?
I think that's fair. I do think as though he should have had a little bit more time to try and get his way out of bad form into good form. They're still in touching distance of the top four, still in the last 16 of the Champions League, still in the FA Cup. But there was a couple of performances at the end of last season, the start of the season, that worried me. The 3-0 down against West Brom, come back to 3-3. I was at the Southampton game when Chelsea were unbelievable for 45 minutes and battered Southampton. They drew that 3-3. They were hanging on towards the end of the game. So there's been games where he got himself into good form. There's one period of time, November, December, where they had the most clean sheets in the league and they were sitting top of the league, I think, on December the 5th. I never had them as title favourites. I didn't get carried away, and nor did Frank. And he tried to tell everyone, look, they're not ready for a title challenge. And now they're in bad form. The Leicester performance really worried me, Dan. Yeah. That was a 2-0 loss that could easily have been 5 or 6. But I still think, you know, if you're Roman Abramovich and you're, you know, the board of directors at Chelsea, you must understand that Frank Lampard coming to Chelsea is going to have a difficult time. He's just not going to come in as a club legend and try to compete with Klopp and Ancelotti and, you know, Pep Guardiola and Mourinho. It's going to be difficult for him. So when you are in difficult times, I would have thought they would have showed him a little bit of loyalty and, more importantly, a little bit of patience. And if it didn't work out in a month's time and Chelsea was still in his position, then I could totally understand. But I just think the timing just seems a little bit off.
What was it, Jules? What was the last straw?
Well, not the Luton game, because they won it. And it's always strange when you sack someone after a win, even if it's in the FA Cup or for Thomas Tuchel, a PhD in the league, for example. I think it's an accumulation of things. Like the boys have said, the results haven't been good enough. He is the manager of the Abramovich era with the lowest point tally per game, per league game, which is just not good enough. It's not good enough. The performances that they've put, the way they've played, no identity, and we at the end of January now, no patterns of play, no style. There's nothing you can see really in the games they played. Too many defeats, certainly in the last 6 weeks. And I think he also pays the difficult relationship he had with Marina Granovskaya, difficult relationship that he had with some of the dressing room. Certainly the fact that Timo Werner and Kai Havertz have failed so far to establish themselves in that team is also on him. He can argue that he wanted Declan Rice, that he didn't think the team was balanced, that he needed a bit more time, whatever excuses he can come up with. I think overall it's just not good enough. And we've seen Abramovich in the past sacking managers who've won great things, like Mourinho, like Ancelotti, and keeping some like Sarri, like Conte, to finish the season, and they finished with a trophy as well. But for him, he must have thought that it was the right time to change and to bring Thomas Tuchel in.
What are you hearing, Don?
I'm not hearing much. I've dropped Jody Morris a text this afternoon, and obviously I wouldn't bombard them with text because you know Frank will be hurting, and so will Jody Morris. But Frank knows. I think he said that in his statement tonight that he's disappointed, and rightly so. And I just go back to the bigger picture, Dan, and unless I'm naive, you know, when you see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and you see Mikel Arteta and you see Frank Lampard coming into the Premier League and they're expected to win the Premier League, they're expected to try and get close to winning Champions Leagues, that is so difficult. And you see what Ole's done. I mean, this guy was going to be sacked when they when they failed to qualify for the last 16 of the Champions League and went out ridiculously early and badly as well. And Arteta was under pressure, what, 2 months ago? And Arteta's turned things around ever so slightly. Ollie's now sitting top of the league. So I just think a little bit of patience. But unfortunately, we're talking about Chelsea, and they don't offer any manager any patience, even when they win the league or win the very biggest of trophies, you know, Champions Leagues. They still pull the trigger.
Do you know, I think his biggest mistake has been that when you go out and spend so much money on attacking players and you come to the halfway stage of the season and nobody knows what your front four is going to be, then I think that's it. If I'm looking at that from their point of view, it's, well, how long do we give this guy to sort out how we're going to go forward? Because right now, you've probably got, what, 7 or 8 players vying for 4 spots, and we have had every single combination, and we still don't know, come a Saturday afternoon, who's going to step forward and play in that front four. So that, I would suggest that's been his biggest mistake.
How should he have handled that, Stevie?
Well, I think you have to decide eventually on a unit, how you're going to play, all of these things. Yes, you can when you bring in so many new players, you can expect a little bit of time to figure out what's the best way forward. Who am I going to hang my hat on to play in the left and the right? Who's my centre forward? Who's my man underneath if I'm going to play that way? And you can't ask for half a season and still not be able to actually turn round and answer that question. Because if they asked Frank, right, well, what's your best front four? He wouldn't be able to tell them. So that's why I think this is his biggest mistake.
We're hearing, Jules, of people in the dressing room, some of the more veterans, not happy with the way that Lampard spoke to them or with some of his tactics.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's fair. And Don earlier talked about the Leicester game. I think it was pretty obvious for everyone, including his own players, that there was one team that was coached and had a structure tactically, especially, and knew exactly what to do, and another one in Chelsea that they had no idea. And I think the problem was for some of the players in that squad. It's okay when you've got young players like last season and you're learning with them, they're learning with you, it's okay. But when you bring in, or when you have in your squad players who've worked with some of the best managers in the world, and suddenly you're there and you don't really have much of an idea, and also you're not clearly, as Stevie very rightly explained, no one knows what's happening. We're not seeing anything. We're not seeing any progress, any tactical tweaks or even structure again put in place. There's no identity. There's no philosophy. There's just nothing there. I think there's a point where he shows too much. And certainly some of the players, especially some who were not playing, were not happy. Let's not forget that Frank Lampard has been a manager for 2.5 seasons. 2.5 years for a job like this, at a club like this, with this squad, is crazy. And I think he's also paid that. He paid the fact that he lacked so much experience in bad times, so much experience in managing a dressing room like this with big egos, with big names, big players, and also lacking experience when you're in a game where it's very tight, it's a thin edge on whether you're going to win it or lose it, and you end up losing it. And I just think he needed a bit of time to learn, and Chelsea right now don't have any time for him to learn.
Too big too soon, Stevie?
Listen, it's dead easy now that he's gone, and we can sit and look at the time he spent there, and really it's hard to suggest that it's an outrageous decision. I do believe he should have had more time, but I think when you look back, and I've just pointed out one of the problems, then it probably is just a little too big too soon, yeah.
Don, it's interesting because we know the dynamic at Chelsea and the power that the board have. Why would he go about picking fights? Why would you do that when you know the repercussions were always going to be extreme?
I don't think it's a case of picking fights, Dan. I think when you go into a club like Chelsea and they've had so many problems in terms of new players coming in, a massive turnover of players, but more importantly, I don't think Frank was given the time to get rid of a few, because that dressing room is not a good one, in my opinion. You know, people like Emerson are not good enough. Someone like Marcus Alonso, clearly not good enough, but not been trying a leg. Rudiger, I was surprised because I thought he was fantastic since he's been there, but hasn't been in good form. So when you're a young manager and to go into a club like Chelsea and you want to bring youth through like Mason Mount and Reece James and Tammy Abraham, you're going to be upsetting the senior pros. Now, that's not picking a fight. That's trying to do what you think's best for the club. Now, there's an argument saying, well, put your arm around the senior pros and wait, you know, give the young players a little bit more time. But he thought he'd go a different way. And he's brought so many young players through that I don't think any other manager in Chelsea history would ever have done in a transfer embargo and a ban that he had. So, yes, he had a little bit of fortune where he could look at the youth players, but he still brought them through and he still made them very good players. But when you try and, as you said, pick fights with older pros, if it doesn't go well, older pros can be a nightmare inside a dressing room. They really, really can. And I don't think the older pros have really helped Frank on this one. They won't lose any sleep over it. I'm pretty sure of that because I know what professionals are like. But some of those professionals at Chelsea need to take a look at themselves.
Let's talk about Thomas Tuchel then, the favourite to come in and replace Frank Lampard. Jules, is this a good appointment in your opinion?
It's certainly a very interesting one. If you take it from Tuchel's point of view, obviously in Paris he felt that he just wanted to be a coach and could not just be a coach because of all the politics within the club, around the club. He fell out with the media in France because he thought they were too critical. He fell out with Leonardo, the sporting director. They just didn't have the same opinion. We saw that with the Tony Rudiger incident in the summer. He fell out with some of his dressing room because I think there was a point where some of his choices were counterproductive, playing Marquinhos in midfield, Danilo Pereira at the back, and some of the players didn't really understand it. But if you look from a Chelsea point of view, what will Tuchel find in Chelsea? In many ways, it's very similar to Paris. He will have to work with Granovskaya, with Peter Cech, with McCoughlin. It's not an easy environment there. There's a lot of advisors around Roman Abramovich, like there's a lot of advisors around Nasser Al-Khelaifi in Paris and the Emir of Qatar as well. There's a dressing room at Chelsea that I don't think, like Don just said, is very easy to manage, probably, a bit like in Paris. There's media with a lot of pressure, a lot of expectations, like in Paris. And we go again. And if Thomas Tuchel thought, PSG is not for me because I just want to be a coach, I'm not sure he will find that environment at Chelsea. I hope for him because he's a really good coach. If he can have his ideas and they can come across and the dressing room listens to him and you get a bit of the Tuchel that you got in Germany, no problem. I'm all in and I think he can have success with that squad because it's a very talented squad. But if he just wants to coach, I'm not sure at Chelsea. That's the case. Again, at Chelsea, a bit like in Paris and other big clubs in Europe, you have to be more than a coach.
Is it lazy of me just to say, right, we need a German coach to bring the best out of those players, Timo Werner and Kai Havertz, Jules? We spent so much money on them. We need someone who can really bring the best out of him, and he's got to be German to do that?
So I don't buy at all the, like, we need a German-speaking manager. They speak English, both Werner and Havertz, very well. If you speak English to them, they will understand. However, if you ask me who right now, as a manager, knows and who is available. So Nagelsmann is not available. Peter Bosch, who had Werner and Havertz before, and he's not available either. Right now, Thomas Tuchel, who've watched every single game they've played in the last 5 years or 4 years for Havertz, he will know them so well. Even without having managed them before, he will know them. He will know people around them. He will know how they play, what to do for them to do well. He will know all of that. And I think on that level, on that point, he's probably the best suited for that job, yes.
What does he do, Stevie? First day in, how do you start going about this?
I'll tell you what he does do. He keeps his mouth shut complaining about politics. I mean, come on. You'd given a job in Paris with a bunch of players who are good players, so get on with a job. Why are you getting involved in politics? And it would be the same at Chelsea. You're getting handed a good group of players. So keep away from the politics. What's this politics nonsense? Go and coach the team. On the field of play, we will see what kind of coach you are. Not some guy that wants to get involved with upstairs and there's politics this and politics that. You know what? In my opinion, Tuchel didn't do anything with that Paris team. All we did was, when it came to the big game, all we did was say, well, you know what? This team's all about two players. Because it seemed that the rest were just a sidebar. So what's he done at Paris to suggest that he's this great coach? I'll tell you what, if he gets this job, which it looks like he's getting, then he's got a group of players, go and coach the group of players, and let's see what you're like as a coach, because I don't think he did a good job in Paris. So what's to say he's going to walk into a dressing room? And again, we're talking about all the things that are just secondary. Oh, they've got some pros there that are a little hard to deal with. Wow, wow, wow. Listen, pros are hard to deal with if they don't believe in you, if they don't trust you, and they don't think you know what you're talking about. So he's got to go in there and get a hold of that and make sure everybody trusts him and understands him.
Jules?
Yeah, no, I agree with Stevie. But I do think that he's a good coach. He's proven that. In Paris, he always felt that he could not really bring his ideas across.
I disagree.
He was maybe not as responsive. I think, you know what, I think also he wanted to be loved so much by that dressing room, by Neymar and by Mbappe and by the others, that he almost sort of disowned his own principles of what we've seen before at Mainz and Dortmund, the very high press, very aggressive, very intense, and ended up doing the easy job, which is, you know what, just give the ball to Neymar and to Kylian, and then they will do the rest. Don't worry about the structure, don't worry. And I think that's what in the end cost him, because one of the reasons why he was sacked from Paris, there was no identity there. The football was rubbish. And again, Stevie is right. He can't do that at Chelsea. He will have to put something in place. He will have to have a plan, have an idea. Whether the dressing room responds to it or not, he will have to be a bit tougher than he was in Paris, for sure.
What should that plan be, Don? What's the first thing you do?
Wow, I mean, you've got to have to get, as you said, Dan, I don't think it's too simplistic. You get Timo Werner, you give him confidence, and somehow you get Kai Havertz up to speed. You give him a shot of confidence as well. But as the boys are saying, I think the biggest problem for Frank was is when you're watching his side play, they were really struggling with an identity, with a little bit of DNA on what they were trying to do. I think Thomas Tuchel's got to come in with his own ideas, and whether he rips up anyone else's plan and he puts his stamp and then he says, right, this is what we're going to do. Whatever system it might be, if it's 4-3-3, then that's the system. You stick with that. And you get the right players on board. And be very interested now, by the way, to see what happens to the likes of Mason Mount. Does he get any game time, Thomas Tuchel's come in? Does Reece James get any game time since Thomas Tuchel come in? Same as Abraham. What I would say is a quote from Hans Watzke when he was at Dortmund, the Dortmund CEO. He said, Thomas Tuchel is a very difficult person to work with. So, you know, when I was commentating on Dortmund games, when he was in charge, he was a brilliant manager with really exciting plans. And I was in Monaco in 2017, and Jules might have been there. I think it was the quarterfinal of the Champions League. And Dortmund were flying at the time, and Monaco had a really bright young side with Kylian Mbappe and Thomas Lemar and sensational players all over the pitch. And I was pitch side, and we got the teams coming through. And Dortmund were flying at the time, and their best two players were Christian Pulisic, Nusman and Dembele. He put them both on the bench, and he played three at the back, and he tried to do something really clever to try and outfox Monaco, and Monaco beat them 3-1. And then they beat them in the return leg. And it was a case of Thomas Tuchel just trying to be too clever for himself instead of stick to what he's good at by putting a plan in place and working hard and sticking with that plan.
Stevie, what's the first thing you would do if you walked into the Chelsea dressing room?
Do you know, I think everything always starts with hard work.
Right.
You know, there's been occasions recently where Frank's been talking about, you know, we didn't do this and we didn't do that. We didn't close it. And I'm talking about we didn't close the ball and we didn't have energy. Because without the very basic, and that's hard work, all the ability in the world doesn't, you never see it. So the first thing he has to do is get them on their toes and get them working really hard. And once they do that as a unit, all the ability will come out. And there's no other way of doing it. It has to be from the very start, and it's called hard work.
What are the expectations from him for the rest of the season, Jules, from the Chelsea board? Is it top four? Is that it?
I think they need Champions League football, of course, financially, especially in the current context. But again, he's arriving at the end of January. So if he misses out on top four, having arrived when the team is ninth, albeit only 5 points behind top four, he won't be blamed for finishing fifth, sixth, seventh, even eighth or ninth. I don't think he will be blamed. And next season would really be when the era starts. However, he can very much finish in the top four. Again, it's a very talented team. He's a very talented coach. If things work out pretty quickly, he starts with two home games, Wolves and Burnley. This is two winnable games. No, there's no doubt about that at all. And after that, if you start having momentum, let's say Timo Werner starts scoring again, there's not that lack of confidence anymore. If defensively you'll be more solid, let's see, like Don was saying, let's see who he changes and or what the first team selection is, the changes that he makes at halftime. But Pulisic had a very good year with him. One especially at Dortmund. Thiago Silva was really good towards the end of last season at PSG. So there's players that he knows there already. Tony Rudiger, we mentioned him before, plus Werner, plus Havertz. So I think this could blend pretty quickly if he gets the right message across very quickly. And again, if the dressing room responds to what he wants.
Don, do you think it helps him that there are no fans? because from most Chelsea support I've seen, they're not happy with the decision to sack Frank Lampard. Do you think if there were fans, it would be a little more apparent?
What, in terms of Thomas Tuchel coming in?
Yeah.
No, I think Thomas Tuchel and I think managers would want fans inside the stadium. I get where you're coming from. I think the reception will be good. I think there'll be an element of, you know, fans watching in from the outside, not being inside the stadium. I think they'll still want their club to do well. And Frank's left on what they think is decent terms. He'll forever be a legend. You know, it was only on Sunday in the FA Cup game, there's a banner behind the goal, and Frank, we trust. On the Monday, you know, come Tuesday, he's been sacked. So, no, I don't think Thomas Tuchel will be at all worrying about those fans in the stadium or not in the stadium. He's got a big job on. I disagree with Jules, and he's come in January. If he finished ninth at the end of this season, my goodness me, the knives will be in his back already going into the start of next season, because ninth for Chelsea from January till the end of the season,
it's like Jurgen Klopp,
would be nowhere near good enough.
But why? It's like Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen Klopp arrived, Liverpool at eighth. They finished eighth that season. And you know, he needed time to put stuff in place together. It's the same for Tuchel. It's not because Tuchel, if Tuchel arrives at their ninth and he finishes ninth, it has to be a failure.
That's no
He's also preparing
then,
for the for the seasons no to come as well.
There's no progress. If Thomas Tuchel's coming in at ninth and he finishes ninth, Frank Lampard, I would imagine, would have done better than ninth.
Oh, so for Klopp, it was okay, but it would not be okay for Tuchel.
No, I'm not saying
well,
that.
Well, you're dealing with a different group
Frank
of players.
Lampard, I'm comparing Thomas Tuchel. I'm just saying if there's going to be progress, that was Dan. I think Dan's first question at the top of the show. What, you know, progress? There has to be progress. And I understand he's coming in January. Well, you'd like to think Roman Abramovich and the board and Tuchel would have higher expectations in starting at ninth and finishing there.
Final point, Stevie.
I agree with Don. Listen, the group of players that Tuchel will take over, it's way better than the group of players that Klopp took over. Way better. So I would suggest if he finishes ninth, then he'll be at the door. Absolutely.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. More from the boys on Extra Time. You can check that out, as always, over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Let's talk about Liverpool, shall we? Me, myself and Don had a little discussion yesterday about whether or not it was a big deal that they lost to Manchester United in the FA Cup. Steve Nicol, first time you've had the chance to chip in. What do you think?
Listen, I think the most important thing for Liverpool is up until 3 or 4 weeks ago was winning the league again, but now it's kind of making sure of getting in the top four and not being in the FA Cup is going to help that, because of all the games it means that players are going to be a little fresher. So in the big picture, it's not huge that they lost to Manchester United. However, I think it's the way they lost that is going to be worrying between now and the end of the season, if I'm Klopp.
Go on, Stevie. What issues did you see going forward?
Well, up until now, they've kind of gotten away without the centre-backs. They've made do pretty well. And it's really just affected them going forward, because you're taking two of your midfielders out the back, particularly Henderson and Fabinho, and playing them as centre-backs. I think that's affected them going forward. But as I said, up until this Man United game, they've kind of gotten away with it. But the reason they lost this game is because of the fact that they had no proper centre-backs. The two of the three goals were just horrendous mistakes from a defensive point of view. You know, the fact that Milner's running all the way back in to end up in the middle of where the centre-back should be, and then even he makes a mess of it. And Rhys Williams making a complete and utter shambles of trying to cut out a ball through to Rashford. And there's two of your goals because of the centre-back situation. Now, you throw in the fact that arguably the best goalie in the world, throws one in to lose you the game, because you can't lose a goal. I don't care how fast the ball travels today. If you're a world-class goalie, you can't get beat in the same side when you set the wall up to block the other side. It's just that's wrong. So, you know, defensively, it really stood out that there's problems there. And as I said, they've gotten away with it up until now, but you can't get away with things forever. And I'm just hoping that between now and the end of the season, it's not a regular occurrence, because if it is, then they're not going to make the top four, never mind defend the Premier League title.
Don, even Liverpool legend Steve Nicholls says you were talking nonsense yesterday.
I don't think I am. I thought the game that I watched was so much better than the West Brom, the Newcastle, the Southampton, the Fulham game. I saw Liverpool that had no spark, there was no energy, never looked like scoring. Very rarely do you watch a Liverpool game and think after 45 minutes to an hour, well, Liverpool ain't scoring today. I thought I saw a performance against Man U where I thought they were much better. Stevie's right, though. I mean, you know, if Jurgen Klopp really wants top four, and I don't buy this argument that Liverpool have got no money. I really don't buy that, the size of the club that Liverpool are. If they really want top four, Jurgen Klopp's got to convince the owners now, the guys that need to back him right now, where Jurgen Klopp's won, you know, four massive trophies. He's won the Premier League, the Super Cup. He's won the Champions League, the Club World Cup. I wouldn't say shoestring budget, because people would pick holes in that. But he's done it on a cheap budget, where he sold about £300 million worth of players and brought some big players in. But the hierarchy now need to back him. When Jurgen Klopp needs the hierarchy at the most crucial time, they have to spend in January. If they don't bring a centre-half in January, I really fear for Liverpool going forward to try and get top four.
Wow.
That's how bad it is. And the knock-on effect of Jordan Henderson coming out of midfield and Fabinho coming out of midfield. I mean, I'm sort of trying to pick positives and thinking, if Thiago, Fabinho and Jordan Henderson are playing in midfield, there's not a better midfield in Europe than those three. But they need centre-backs. They need cover in the meantime before Virgil van Dijk's fit again. What are you laughing at?
It's not.
What's so funny?
Yeah, that's fine, Don. That's fine. Not a better midfield.
Is there a better midfield?
Forget Bayern.
Is there a better midfield in Europe?
Forget Bayern Munich.
Don, he doesn't understand what you're talking about. He's laughing here because he doesn't understand what you mean. That's why he's laughing.
He just shows his pointlessness again, as usual.
Let me paint the simplistic
picture. We're talking about...
Dan, let me just say,
we're talking about...
winning the ball back, pressing high, getting Mane the ball double quick, getting Salah the ball double quick so they can get at full-backs instead of having wingers and full-backs to try and beat. The knock-on effect of Jordan Henderson and Fabinho coming out of that area is too great for Liverpool to try and deal with.
Go on, Stephen.
Well, on which count? On backing Don up in the midfield three or the actual problem for Liverpool? And I think I agree with Don that Liverpool played well, but that was as far as attacking's concerned. And that is the problem. When you've got such a weakness, then if what you're doing going forward isn't working like the Newcastles and the West Brom games of this season, then you're in big trouble. And you're in even bigger trouble when they actually are playing well, as they did against United. You score two goals at Old Trafford and nothing from the game. That's the worry, that Liverpool can go and go away from home and score two goals but still lose three. And there doesn't seem any reason why that won't continue. Because as I said right at the very start, they've been getting away with it, and you can't get away with it forever.
Go on then, Stevie. Why is it the best midfield in Europe?
Why is it the best midfield in Europe?
Here's the problem with your punterness.
Yes.
You know, when three seasons ago, Liverpool's best midfield was Wijnaldum, Henderson and Milner, right? And Liverpool were pushing everybody, and they were in the Champions League final. Now, individually, they're not the greatest individuals in world football, they're not. But you can't argue as a unit They were better than anybody else. Why did they get to the Champions League final? Why were they pushing City to win the Premier League? Why did they eventually win the Champions League final? Why did they eventually win the Premier League? Because the middle three as a unit were way superior to anybody else. Not as individuals, but as a unit. And that is what Don was saying. And the reason you laughed is because of your punterness. No, that's why.
I like the explanation, but they've been since overtaken by Bayern as the best team in the world, though, Stevie, no?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I didn't...
So then, by definition, that Bayern midfield is then better?
No.
But that Stevie's argument is, look,
well,
what Liverpool have done.
By definition... Hold on. Well, let me answer your question.
Yep.
By definition, Bayern are getting results. By definition, Liverpool are not, because the front three couldn't hit a barn door from 3 yards. Mm. You know, so I don't... You can't pick and choose where you want to put the blame or you want to put the praise.
But isn't that exactly...
You know, Henderson.
Isn't that exactly what you're doing? You're saying the success that Liverpool had when they won the Premier League and they won the Champions League was because how good those three, the midfield, worked as a team. Mm. So now So now I can't give the same praise to Bayern?
No, you can give the same praise to Bayern.
I agreed with you. I agreed with you that Bayern had overtaken Liverpool. I agreed with you that Bayern had overtaken Liverpool.
Two of them playing centre-halves.
What I disagree with you is... exactly.
Go and ask Joshua Kimmich and go and ask Leon Goretzka to go and play centre-half for Bayern.
John, you can't argue with us. You can't argue with a punter. You should know that by now.
Exactly. Just a punter. We could be all day. That is it. Thank you. It's West Brom against Manchester City tomorrow. Remember, it was 1-1 when these teams met earlier on in the season. According to everybody, though, Manchester City were going to go and win that. Of course, the last time they made this sort of prediction, Burnley won at Anfield.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Archie Rintutt normally has that sort of effect on people. He joins us now. He was conducting that post-match interview. Steve Cherundolo as well. You heard, of course, calling the game for the world at feed. Steve, you said it at the start of the game, Dortmund are vulnerable at set pieces. This is not new. Why on earth do they not work? Why don't they fix it?
Well, I'm sure they've been talking about it, and I'm sure there's plenty of planning going on in the coaches' offices. But set pieces do account for about a third of the goals in all professional football. And I do not know very many coaches who spend a third of the time on the training pitch on set pieces. You know, a lot of coaches talk about it, like we said, they prepare, but do they actually go out and train on the pitch? I mean, the only ones who can answer that are the Borussia Dortmund coach and staff. But by the looks of the past set pieces, especially defensive, I don't think they've spent a whole lot of time on the training field with set pieces.
Archie, obviously you could see Haaland visibly frustrated after the game there.
Yeah, he said he was pissed three times, which I thought got the message across. The fact that they keep conceding from set pieces says a lot to me about this team and how the mixture just isn't quite right. You've got older players in the team like Marco Reus trying to find their form, let alone having to take care of these younger players and chevy them along. But what Steve's saying there about set pieces as well. On the other side of the coin, you have Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are the best team in the Bundesliga at scoring from set pieces. And I spoke to Marco Rosa, their coach, after the game, and he says they don't practice them at all. So it can work both ways. given by how much it looks like Dortmund have been working on defending them right now. But I look at Manuel Akanji, their centre-back, and I asked him as well as Erling Haaland and Edin Terzic about the problem. And he said, well, it's not like we're conceding from there every game. And I was stunned into silence because they pretty much are. So if everyone's not on the same page, then you have a problem in the team.
What are the German press saying about it, Archie?
That it needs to get a lot better for Dortmund. Plain and simple. There's not much more to say than that. And that if Dortmund continue in this way, then they are going to have big problems in the summer because they will miss qualifying for the Champions League. And given that the club is already set to lose around 100 million euros, according to reports here, they're going to have to sell Jadon Sancho in the summer. They might have to sell another name. I don't think it'll be Erling Haaland at this stage. But then again, will Erling Haaland want to stay at the club if they're not playing in the Champions League? Given the way that he is dragging this team with one hand right now into any sort of European contention, I could understand if he'd want to go.
That's a great point, isn't it, Steve? The general consensus is, look, he's still very young. This is a great place for him to grow as a player. However, when you see the results that they've been getting recently and not getting in the Champions League, which is very possible, you couldn't blame Haaland, could you, for pushing for a move?
No, certainly not. And I think if you ask the player, I think you get a very honest answer. I think he'll say he's happy, he's growing, it's the right place for him. But I'm sure his agents have different ideas for him. Or his agent, but I imagine there's a few people behind that business. So I think there's an answer out there that would probably place him somewhere else if Borussia Dortmund does not qualify for the Champions League again. Whether or not it would be for his development detrimental to stay at the club, I don't think so. I think he'd be fine. I think he would continue to score goals in this league. I think he can still grow as a forward in this league without playing in the Champions League. But I find it very hard to believe that they would hold on to him if they did not qualify.
Steve, from a coaching perspective, what would you do this week if you're in charge of Dortmund?
I would try to free up their minds, try to make them relax, let them play, find the fun of the game again. One thing I for sure would do would play old against young. You know, it's an interesting scrimmage you see out there. The young players are always trying to prove themselves. But 9 times out of 10, the old always wins. And it actually reminds me of the title race for the past 9 years as well. Bayern München against Borussia Dortmund, it's old against young as well. The old experience, they will always find a way to win because they're smarter, they're clever, and they've been in that situation a number of times before.
Let's talk about Thomas Tuchel, of course, officially confirmed as the new coach of Chelsea, was set to be. Let's not jump ahead of ourselves, Dan. It's set to be confirmed at some stage this week as the new manager of Chelsea. Archie, is this a good fit, in your opinion?
He's going to solve their tactical issues, I have no doubt. But going to England and working in the Premier League is a completely different equation to anything that Thomas Tuchel has experienced before. You see that with the way that Julian Nagelsmann was dismantled when he went to Old Trafford, not for anything that he did tactically, even if his team were dismantled on the pitch, but the amount of attention that his attire got that evening. And I think that getting used to the superficial things around is going to be one thing for Thomas Tuchel, and seeing how he works with the dressing room. There have been always reports following him from his time at Dortmund and as well at PSG that he doesn't get on with everybody. But the way that Thomas Tuchel works is he's all about what's going on the pitch and how he gets results to do that. If he has to change the players' diets, he'll do that. He will take every step necessary. He's not there to be everybody's darling, as they say in Germany. He is there to win games. He has not got the same marketability as Jurgen Klopp, for example. You don't see Thomas Tuchel smiling back at you on every billboard here, but he is an exceptionally good coach.
Steve?
I think it's a very good assessment. I think tactically he is second to none. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows what every game needs. But as we see when it comes down to winning titles and in really tight games against teams that are just as good or maybe even better than your team, it's it's more than tactics that are needed to get results. It's about having your team believe in you and what you chose as a game plan for that day. It's connecting with your players before and after games and even during games. It's upsetting them when they need to be upset. It's patting on the shoulder when they need that too. And this is what has always been his, he's been knocked for it, he's not the greatest coach at, is his people skills and his the way he treats his players. But I will say that he has improved in this area, in this category, from his time in Dortmund to now PSG. If we remember the way his team performed in the quarterfinals and semifinals of the Champions League last season, it looked like they were playing for their coach. So this isn't a hopeless matchup, but I do think it's a great challenge for him, but I do feel like he can get the most out of that team.
Steve, it's a tradition, it feels, on Monday that we talk about Matthew Hoppe. Obviously, he didn't score this weekend in Schalke's defeat against Bayern Munich. However, another American did. What a goal from Josh Sargent.
Yeah, he really he put his foot through that one. I think he saw the keeper maybe leaning towards the far post, saw an angle, was a little fortunate there because the defender kind of was in the way and the keeper didn't see the ball until really late. But, you know, it was about time for Josh. I know he was waiting to score for a while now. It felt really good. You saw on his face, he was relieved. But I thought he was very good when he went on. Not just because of the goal, but the way he played and connected and worked for his team. Really great to see him back in top form.
What's the buzz around him, Steve? Because obviously for a striker, he doesn't get a lot of goals, but he gets a lot of playing time.
Yes, but I think the way that Werder Bremen plays, especially due to the injuries they've had in the front line, he's alone a lot. And I think playing against a second forward would really do well for him. Because it would take some of the attention away and he would find more space and maybe more opportunities to score. I don't think that he has forgotten how to score or where to be. He just has more responsibilities in other areas of the field with and without the ball when he's playing up top alone.
Steve, thank you very much. Archie, as always, thank you. You can return to your housemates now in the Big Brother house. Just a reminder, it will be a battle of the American strikers this weekend. Hoppe for Schalke taking on Josh Sargent's Werder Bremen. That's on Saturday. Preceding that, on Friday, Stuttgart against Mainz. Also on Saturday, Bayern against Hoffenheim, Dortmund against Augsburg. Then the big game, Leipzig entertained by Leverkusen. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. We're at the quarterfinal stages of the Coppa Italia, and it doesn't get much bigger, does it, than Inter Milan against AC Milan in the quarterfinal tomorrow. A match you can see live on ESPN, plus the front page of Gazzetta going with a bitter derby as we welcome Gab Marcotti into the show. Gab, what a game this should be.
It really is. And, you know, ordinarily you'd look at this and say, you know, these two teams, they're neck and neck for the title. Obviously, they'll prioritize that over the Coppa Italia. But it's been made pretty clear, certainly on Inter's part, Conte has talked about how he's not going to rotate the squad. He wants to put out his strongest 11. He wants to give the guys who played so well against Juventus a week ago and then played so poorly at the weekend against Udinese, he wants to give them a chance to redeem themselves, kind of one of those, like, show us who you really are type trope, which, you know, obviously Conte being a macho man, he's really into that stuff. I don't know if he's actually going to do it, but I would expect most of the team to really be his best 11. And for Milan, there's some interesting conundrums. You know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming out after the game at the weekend where they lost against Atalanta. talking about how this team needs more experience, how he felt a little bit isolated up front, how things were a little bit fragile. And to be fair to Milan, they had a bunch of injuries, but a lot of people are reading that as a signal. Ooh, could we get to see Ibra alongside Mario Mandzukic? And, you know, what would be, what, like a combined age of 73, 74, something like that. But obviously, two big men, very experienced, and two real handfuls for Inter's three-man defense.
Gab, having said all of that, who's under more pressure than going into this tie?
I think Inter are most definitely under more pressure right now, mostly because there's no pressure like the pressure that Conte puts on himself and, of course, on his players to perform. Milan are kind of playing with house money at this stage. You know, nobody expected them to be leading the league at this stage of the season. You know, they would have been happy with sort of being competing in the top four, especially with all the injuries, of course, that they've had. Whereas for Inter, they're out of the Europa League as well. If you want, this is their Europa League, the Coppa Italia. There's no reason why they shouldn't, you know, try to compete to go all the way in this competition as well as Serie A. So, plus, of course, they have Conte, who effectively laid down a marker to his players, challenging them to show them that the real Inter was the one we saw against Juve and not the one we saw against Udinese.
So that game live tomorrow, 2:45 Eastern on ESPN+. Meanwhile, reflecting on that win for Juventus at the weekend, it's Weston McKennie who is at front page of Tutto Sport. Lots of people very impressed with the young American after making that move. The front page of Scudetto going with Scudetto Wizard after, of course, his celebrations. And it turns out he's a big Harry Potter fan, dedicating it to, well, not dedicated to Harry Potter, but certainly a tribute to him. This is what Arthur had to say. He has surprised me a lot. He's an extremely intense player. He's always running all over the pitch, and he helps defensively too, but he also scores a lot of goals, important ones from midfielder. He's a very, very good midfielder and one of the best. Quite a statement, Gavin. He's not the only one who's saying these sort of things.
No, and I think, you know, more than anything else, what has impressed Juventus and Pirlo's coaching staff, you know, isn't the intensity and the work rate and whatever, because, you know, you kind of expected that. He's coming from the Bundesliga as an American player. It's the fact that he's so smart. It's the fact that his decision-making, it's the fact that he understood sort of Pirlo's tactical playbook from day one, unlike some of his other fellow midfielders, including Arthur, I might add. And he gets it. His decision-making on the pitch, his intelligence with his movements, he understands what Pirlo wants and he understands it straight away. And, you know, for a manager like that, that's got to balance egos and big names in the team and whatever, having a guy who's so team-oriented and who is so quick to understand what the manager wants, to go and fill holes, to go and make runs in certain positions. I mean, that's gold. That's almost as valuable as having, you know, a big-name signing like Federico Chiesa or whatever in your side. So there's no question. I think Weston McKennie has settled better than anybody would have expected.
The tone of it, Gab, seems to be that he's breaking some sort of stereotype that Americans aren't tactically adept.
I don't think it's Americans so much. I think it's more, you know, the fact that in Italy we have this idea that our football is so tactically sophisticated that it takes people time to settle. And remember, he came from Schalke, which is a team that played a very different football from the type of football that Pirlo wanted to do. Also, there is a perception, an incorrect one, I might add, that, you know, in Germany, yes, there is more of a focus on tactical balance, but a lot of it is pressing high up the pitch, doing a lot of things that we in Italy would consider unnecessarily risky. Again, I'm speaking in very broad stereotypes, and that, in any case, it would be a huge adjustment for him coming to a different league where he'd be required to do different things. Instead, I don't know Weston McKennie well enough to be able to answer this, but the guy is obviously the kind of person that, you know, the more you put him in front of a whiteboard and show him movements and with X's and O's, you know, the more he absorbs it and the more he gets it. He's obviously a very, very clever guy, and I think that is really what has impressed Juve more than anything else.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. If you want Gab's thoughts, by the way, on the Frank Lampard sacking, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Some final news to end on. MLS have announced that the new season will start on the weekend of April 3rd and 4th. Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Steve Cherundolo, to Archer Rinter, and to Gab Marcotti as well. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Don, Steve, and Jules answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. So many tweets about Frank Lampard. We covered a lot of it on the show. Julianne Laurent, Stevie Nicol, and Don Hutchison with us. Don, a lot of people are sending tweets with this sort of theme. Who's consoling Don?
I know. I'm very sad tonight, Dan. I'm very, very sad. My mucker's gone. What can I do? Very sad.
Did you text him, FaceTime him?
Oh, I've left Frank alone. I've dropped Jody Morris a little text and he's seen it. He got the little blue tick, so he's seen it. I'll give him a little bit of time to respond.
What did it say?
What did I say? I just said, I've got your back. I sent a nice little tweet this afternoon on trying to back Frank Lampard and the job that he's done, the injuries that he had to deal with at the time.
Oh, God, sucking up.
Timo Werner out of form. Hakim Ziyech not fit.
Where's the professionalism?
I'll put you in a little note. Yeah. That's like half a book.
I was just trying to come on my mate's back, wasn't I? I was just trying to console him. Just trying to show a little bit of compassion. You don't get compassion on this show.
That's why he hasn't answered back to you. He fell asleep halfway through.
Still reading it.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what, Chelsea? I don't need that big compensation package. I've had a lovely message from Don. It's cheered me up. I'm off now. Here we go to enjoy the rest of the year.
Do you know Big Ron said once, Dan? Big Ron said once, sometimes you've just got to grin and bank it.
Well, there you are. Yes. Stevie, did you have lots of... when you left the Revs, did lots of people ring you up and talk like Don did?
Well, the best thing was when I left, the huge compensation package I got.
Oh, beautiful.
I had 2 weeks left on my deal.
No.
2 weeks' wages.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft.
Yeah, I told the missus, go to Stop and Shop and don't spare anything. Go for it.
Oh, no. Would we see more of Kai Havertz under Thomas Tuchel, Jules?
Well, we will certainly, I hope so. Seeing him play in his right position and stop being moved around everywhere, including positions that were really one he has never played in or two are not his. And again, as we mentioned on the show, if there's one guy right now who was available who would know how to get the best out of Kai Havertz and Timo Werner, I guess, as well, it's certainly Thomas Tuchel. So you would hope that he would play him. You don't have to play exactly like the Bayer Leverkusen team of last season was built around Kai Havertz to get the best out of him, and Peter Bosch can explain to us that his 3-4-3 formation worked so well for Havertz and they play with two number 10s, etc. However, maybe getting a bit of inspiration from that, if that's what you want. If you don't want Havertz to play well right now, just bench him and that's it. But if you want a good Kai Havertz, I think a bit of inspiration from what happened last season at Bayer Leverkusen under Peter Bosch can help you for sure.
Yeah, what's the psychology, what's going through his mind, Frank Lampard, when he was putting Havertz all over the place, Stevie?
Well, he's trying to get him in the team. And when you've got a player like that who's not producing, then you've got to try and find somewhere for him. You know, you can't go to your boss and say, "Can you give me 80 million? Was it 80 million you paid for him?"
Yeah.
And then not play him, because straight away the boss is going to go, "Hold on a second, we've just given this guy Frank Lampard 80 million to buy a player, and he's not even playing." So he's probably trying him around everywhere to try and shoehorn him in and fit him in. But unfortunately, what he's done is every time he's put him on the field, he's just slowly and quietly seemed to have drained the confidence and anything he had away to the point of where Havertz is now, which is t- just sat on the bench because that's where he deserved to be because of his performances.
Now that Lampard is sacked, oh, they're still going on about it, Don. What do you think that means to the academy? Do you think Mount, Billy Gilmore, Abraham, Reece James will all get sold so that the new manager can buy his players? And would it be
I've got no idea because I've got no idea how much Thomas Tuchel knows about the young players like Billy Gilmore. He'll know about Mason Mount and Reece James, of course he will, but he won't know too much about Billy Gilmore. Billy Gilmore came into the side and was brilliant. I think it was an FA Cup game last season where he came in against Liverpool and he absolutely bossed it. And then he got a bad injury. So in that period where he's been injured, Thomas Tuchel, I wouldn't imagine, has seen him play. And he's only just got himself back. And, you know, I probably feel for someone like Billy Gilmore. He would have saw a pathway under Frank and a pathway into the first team. Now he's going to have to grind and he's got to work hard because Tuchel's going to come in and it's going to be very interesting to see what his first 11 is going to be. And all I would say, if I was Thomas Tuchel, I'd stick a rocket up one or two like Kai Havertz because his performances have been nowhere near good enough. And it's not just the performances. It's the way he sort of swanned around the pitch and thought he was playing in the Bundesliga and just thought, this is going to be easy ozy. I'll get on the ball and I'll try and nutmeg and I'll try and flick. Premier League doesn't work like that. As Stevie said before, you've got to work extremely hard. Then once you are doubly fit, you then get the rewards and you can play your football.
Do you know, I think the one thing that will save the likes of Billy Gilmore is because of the pandemic. You know, normally a new manager comes in, there's money made available, go and buy some players. That ain't going to happen because A, they've just spent a load of money, and B, the pandemic. So people like Billy Gilmore, if Tuchel's going to rotate, will get an opportunity. I'm not saying how often or how big an opportunity, but I would suggest he'll probably get a chance of stepping on the field, and if he does, Gilmore in particular, he has to make an impression. And if he does make an impression, they'll be okay. So I think right now the squad that's there is the one that Tuchel will be working with for the foreseeable future. Which means, and we're using Gilmore as an example, he and people like him will get an opportunity to step on the field.
Were any of the panellists favourite players for their managers, like Mason Mount was for Frank Lampard, and did it affect their careers after that manager got sacked? Stevie, when you were at Sheffield Wednesday, you were close with Howard Wilkinson. Is that am I getting the right manager?
David Pleat.
David Pleat, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I want his pet or anything like that.
I wasn't suggesting you were his pet.
Yeah, just come on, go. Well done, Stevie. Good boy. There you go. Yeah, there's a chocolate biscuit for you.
And what happened when he left? How did that affect you?
It didn't affect me because I was on my way out by then. My third year at Sheffield Wednesday. I was 38 by then, so you know my first team appearances were on the wane anyway when he left.
Don, were you a favourite? Not necessarily a pet. I'm not using the word pet, but a favourite of a manager.
Definitely not a pet. I might have been Howard Kendall's favourite at Sheffield United when he took me from West Ham to Sheffield United, and then he then moved on to Everton and took me with him. So that was a nice little touch from Howard.
Right. So you were his favourite, basically.
Yeah.
And then what happened when he left?
Did he not make you the captain as well?
Yeah, so I probably was his pet, really.
Yeah, you were his pet.
I was Jules.
And obviously, Jules, we know that...
by the way, hey, Don, at least he recognised you. I was his assistant in Notts County, and about 8 years later, I played in a testimonial game with old Liverpool, old Everton teams. Testimonial for Kenny Dalglish's wife's charity. And we're at the door later on at night, and I hadn't seen him all day. And so I went over to the table he was sat with all his mates and all that, and I was like, hey, how you doing? And he put his head up and he looked at me, and he went, aye, fine, aye, thanks, aye. And then just went like that, completely custard-pied me. Had no idea who I was.
Wait, Stevie, you know...
A couple of two cherries by then, though, Stevie.
Yeah, mate.
Well, I would agree that the whole table had a few... packets of crisps by then, so.
Well, maybe that was a little problem as well. 8 years in the interim, Steve, you may have eaten quite a few packets of crisps, and with the glasses, maybe not quite as recognisable as were during that time.
No, I was, listen, I was as fit as a butcher's pencil for that game.
Yeah, right.
I was.
Why?
I said, Well, because I'd spent 6 months training for it.
Did you really?
Kenny called me. I did, aye.
Because you didn't want everyone to take the mickey?
Well, I wanted to play, and I wanted to do well, and I wanted to play 90 minutes. I didn't want to be going on for 10 minutes at a time like some owl geezer. So I got myself in. I was a great Nick. Not an ounce of fat on me.
Wow. Talking of favourites, Jules, do you write articles in a more positive way when it comes to you as an owner, as a pet of Neymar?
Maybe.
Yes, definitely.
Maybe.
Definitely.
Well, that's a yes.
I've seen him talk about PSG with a little glint in his eye.
Don, any advice for your mate Frank Lampard? Would you just suggest he takes a sabbatical or get back into the managerial hot seat with a lesser team?
I think he'll probably take a sabbatical. His wife's pregnant, so he'll take a little bit of time, spend time at home, and then we'll see him back.
He definitely wants a job. He don't want to be at home when all that's going on.
But I think he'll be stung by this. He's still in his, I think he's 42, so he's still young, so we'll see him back.
Oh, dear.
Why no dear? That's positive.
No, your wife's pregnant, you've got to deal with her and then the baby when it's born. Oh, God, at least if you had a job, it's great. You've got a job, you get the excuse to get out.
Exactly. So just go through that little process and then just go, I need to get back in the game.
But who would take him, Jules?
That's the question. Where do you go after Chelsea? I mean, there's no top six clubs right now who will go for him anyway. So he will have to accept clubs who are not have the standing as Chelsea. And again, it's not a problem, and it's not me being critical of those clubs. And maybe for him and his learning curve and learning the job, as we said, he's still such an incredibly young manager. And like Don just reminded us as well, he's only 42 years of age. So maybe going to a club like, I don't know, Newcastle, for example. Okay, maybe Newcastle is the wrong, but you know, that kind of club that will aim between 8th and 12th, for example, and then learn there, have highs and have lows, but lows that don't get you sacked. And maybe that'd be good for him. And then you come back stronger, and then you're back in contention for the big jobs. And then you can go to another big club again, but right now he will have to settle for that for sure.
Do coaches really lose the locker room? Examples, Don.
Yes, they do. And it just comes with bad performances. You don't have trust in certain players. Like, remember Alan Pardew took over at West Ham and he had really good experienced players. He had people like myself, Steve Lomas, Christian Daly, Teddy Sheringham. He had really, you know, guys that have sort of been around the block in our sort of low 30s. And he come in, Alan Pardew, and, you know, he wanted to bring people like Anton Ferdinand. He wanted to bring Joby McEnough. He wanted to bring Marlon Harewood. He wanted to bring Rio Coca. Young players that he could have an opinion on and a voice on. And he didn't want the older boys sort of chipping away, having an opinion when you've had 15 years in the game. And he binned all the experienced players, Alan Pardew, got us out of the way, put us in the reserves. And he had this young, fresh West Ham side who then couldn't actually win a game. So after that, he was very lucky that he didn't lose the experienced players that I've just mentioned, because we were good pros. And he had to sort of put an arm around us all and say, look, I need you to help the play. And we were, you know, one or two sort of had some stern words with him. But the majority of us were like, look, you're really lucky you've got some good pros and we'll help you, because that's our job, because we are professionals. And I think the younger players then benefited from a little bit of a mix of the experienced players and the young ones. It was just too much for the youngsters, and that's the way sometimes managers go. They throw the young boys in and discard the old boys who are still valuable.
Stevie?
Yeah, I think managers do lose the dressing room. Listen, when things are going badly and you're losing games, basically everybody's looking to you to come up with a solution. And then you have to come up with one. And regardless of whether it's right or wrong, you have to convince the players that it's the right way to go in order for them to get behind it 100%. And if you don't make sense, then they'll smell it a mile away. So, yeah, absolutely, you can lose a dressing room.
Jules, of course, has got to go and do something else, which is more important, so we've got to be quick for these last two questions.
No, I don't.
Well, they've just told me we've got to hurry up. You've got to do French radio.
Yeah. But how long more of the extra time now? I mean, it's more than extra time now. It's double extra time, double overtime, like in the NBA.
If you just answered a question, you're prolonging it by talking nonsense and asking how long there is left.
Don took up the first 10 minutes for a soliloquy on blooming Frank Lampard and Jody Morris.
I know. I thought he was going to cry. He was getting emotional. I thought he was going to cry about Frank Lampard and Jody Morris and all his pads and stuff. Then Stevie's Wi-Fi, who probably dates the 1980s, broke up. It's not my fault.
Okay, Jules.
Well, why don't you fire a little text off to Thomas Tuchel, see if he gets back to you tonight?
No one's got back to you. They've only blue ticked you. Jules.
Yeah, why would he not answer you? Don, why would Jody not answer?
Just let him breathe. Let them have a little bit of time.
It must be hard to take, Don. See?
That's being a good friend on my part. I've shown a bit of compassion. Now leave them alone.
So all that,
don't test the people.
All that tick shows is he's actually looked at it. He's probably looked at it and went, oh, it's that Dauber Hodgson.
I'm done again. Leave me alone.
Don't compound the error, Stevie. Don't compound it by sending another one.
God. It's him again. I wish he'd stop texting me.
Oh, dear.
How do you mute him? Can I mute him?
Mute him. Ghost him. This is it. Oh, dear. Don't be terrible at Tinder. Right, Jules. Antoine Griezmann has put in some really good performances in the last couple of weeks and starting to get really well with his teammates. Are you still optimistic regarding his future at Barcelona? Jules will say yes and we can move on.
I just don't think they played well at the weekend. They won, okay. I don't think they played well. I don't think he played particularly well either. I'm still a bit like meh about his performances and the team's performances.
Oh dear. Final question for Jules and Stevie: should Liverpool learn some throw-in tips from Cheltenham after the goal versus Manchester City at the weekend? That was some throw. Did you see that, Stevie? Were you watching? Because I know you're in Philly. No, you didn't see it. It was a big old Rory Delap-esque throw that the Cheltenham player had.
Ben Toza.
Yeah.
The old ones are the best ones. Always
he was winding Pep up, which is quite funny, watching that all going on the sidelines. Right, I think that is it. Jules, Stevie, thank you very much. Don, we'll leave you just to watch WhatsApp for the rest of the day.
Yeah, just to try.
I'm sure Jordy will get back to you. Don't worry.
All right, guys.
If you look at your phone hard, it will answer back.
Let's have a look. Let's have a look, Jules.
No,
nothing.
No typing, nothing. Right, that's it. Right, good, Jules, go do your show. Bye-bye.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.